Hello and welcome to Background Briefing. I'm Ian Masters, and today we'll look into a number of stories and issues in the news. We'll begin with two Washington insiders who wrote the New York Times bestseller, It's Even Worse Than It Looks, How the American Constitutional System Collided with the New Politics of Extremism. Norman Ornstein and Thomas Mann were among the first to expose the capture of the Republican Party by extremists, and we will discuss the threat to the Constitution posed by Tea Party radicals who want nothing short of unconditional surrender by Barack Obama of his presidency. Then we will speak with Dr. Jacob Hacker, the director of the Institution for Social and Policy Studies at Yale University and co-author of Winner Take All Politics, How Washington Made the Rich Richer and Turned Its Back on the Middle Class. We will discuss what the business community can do to lean on Republican lawmakers to avert the catastrophic self-inflicted wound of a default that would permanently undermine America's unique advantage as a haven for global capital. Then finally, we will look into the latest report on the failed war on drugs published this week in the British Medical Journal. The lead author, Daniel Werb, the co-founder of the International Center for Science in Drug Policy, who released the study, joins us to discuss the evidence that drugs have become cheaper, more pure and potent, and much more plentiful in the last two decades, despite an increase in drug seizures around the world. And joining us now is Norman Ornstein, a senior fellow at the American Enterprise Institute and a longtime observer of Congress and politics. He writes a weekly column for Roll Call called Congress Inside Out and is an election eve analyst for CBS News. He led a working group of scholars and practitioners that helped shape the law known as the McCain-Feingold law that reformed the campaign financing system. He was elected as a fellow of the American Academy of Arts and Sciences in 2004. And also joining us is Thomas Mann, a senior fellow in governance studies at the Brookings Institution, where he holds the W. Averill Harriman Chair. A noted congressional scholar, he writes and speaks widely on American politics and policymaking, including campaigns, elections, campaign finance reform, and the effectiveness of Congress. Together, they are co-authors of The Broken Branch, How Congress is Failing America and How to Get It Back on Track, and most recently, the New York Times bestseller, now out in paperback, It's Even Worse Than It Looks, How the American Constitutional System Collided with the New Politics of Extremism. Welcome to Background Briefing, Norman Ornstein and Thomas Mann.
Delighted to be with you.
And starting with you, Norman, both you and Tom really were ahead of the curve here with your book, It's Even Worse Than It Looks, How the American Constitutional System Collided with the New Politics of Extremism, now out in paperback. Did you ever think it could get this worse, though?
You know, Tom and I have thought with the new paperback out, which is an expanded version with an afterword that brings it up to date, that perhaps we should have retitled it, It's Even Worse Than It Was. We don't take much comfort from being ahead of the curve here, Ian. What you might have imagined after President Obama's sweeping reelection and the strong showing of Democrats nationwide in 2012 was that we would get a brief respite from this tribal battling. And instead, we've deteriorated into something that's leading us straight for the abyss.
And Tom, what's your sense of how things have gotten so much worse than it's even worse than it looks?
You know, it reinforces the fact that our problems are deep, that they've been developing over a period of years, that they're rooted in an intense and deep partisan polarization that is not symmetric. One of our parties has really become more extreme, both in its views and agendas, but also importantly in its view of the legitimacy of the opposition party and its belief that it can pursue tactics that the framers of the U.S. Constitution would have been appalled by. It's all good and well to protect minority interests, but the idea that that one small group in one house in a bicameral legislature in a separation of powers system can wreak this kind of damage by making non-negotiable demands on a bill that was enacted almost 3 years ago and is now being implemented is just breathtaking.
And Norman Ornstein, you mentioned that after the 2012 elections, you thought that might be a return to civility, if not reality. But in January, shortly after it, the Republicans met at Williamsburg in a retreat to lick their wounds. And apparently they came up with the Williamsburg Accords that essentially have led to this strategy and to this impasse where they've decided that they wouldn't negotiate with the president and they wouldn't negotiate with the Senate, and that they'd force them to come to them, both the president and the Senate. And that seems to be how it's played out. So it doesn't seem like they learned their lesson so quickly out of the gate in January.
No, you know, it's funny. And after the election, I joke that since Mitch McConnell had, for the entire Obama first term, said his number one goal was to make Obama a one-term president, that after the 2012 elections, he could say, well, I've achieved the goal of making him a two-term president. Mission accomplished. Now let's govern. But instead, you're exactly right. What happened is a group that had seen its majority in the House shrink, its numbers in the Senate go down, losing handily in a presidential election, which was in many ways a referendum on Obamacare, the Republicans decided that they could keep leverage and maybe even accomplish a good portion of the agenda that they'd run on in 2012 by using these tactics, which are fundamentally blackmail and hostage-taking. And since you're doing it over the basic operations of government, now shut down so that the flu vaccination program at the Centers for Disease Control is stopped as flu season starts. Cancer patients are being blocked from entering trials at NIH. And now we have the full faith and credit of the United States on the line and looming in 2.5 weeks. It's just breathtaking and dismaying.
Again, I'm speaking with Norman Ornstein, who writes a weekly column for Roll Call called Congress Inside Out, and Thomas Mann, who is a noted congressional scholar, and they are the co-authors of It's Even Worse Than It Looks, How the American Constitutional System Collided with the New Politics of Extremism, just out in paperback. And they were way ahead of the curve when the book originally came out. And interesting enough, you weren't really welcome on all of the Washington talk shows because you committed the heresy of basically blaming one side in this binary press convention of he said, she said. Do you think, Tom, that that press convention is going to continue and essentially assign blame to both sides in this obviously one-sided situation?
Well, we've seen signs of that. A couple of days ago, the Washington Post had this extraordinary editorial about enough of this. The two sides must come together and compromise. And a number of the people critical of false equivalents, including Jim Fallows, you know, took to their blog, cited our own earlier arguments on this. And this morning, the Post attributed the blame to John Boehner, Eric Cantor, Paul Ryan. So there's a hopeful sign. The fact is, Ian, it's very difficult. If you're an academic, if you're a journalist, not with the partisan press, but with the, if you will, mainstream press, and don't want to be charged with partisan bias, you tend to look for tools, techniques that allow you to avoid picking sides, even if the reality you're facing is day and night, up or down, which is he says, she says, they say, but they say something very different. And it's really an admission of weakness, partly professional norms, but even more than that, a difficult environment. And we thought it was important, if you're going to do anything about our dysfunctional politics, you better understand what's wrong. And the biggest unreported story in recent years has been the radicalization of the Republican Party. And until we bring them back into the mainstream, that dysfunction will almost certainly continue.
Norman Ornstein, you mentioned the full faith and credit of the U.S. being on the line in 2.5 weeks on October the 17th. The House Budget Committee Chairman Paul Ryan has said that the deadline to address the debt limit and avoid a default could be a forcing mechanism to bring the two parties together. So that's really government by extortion he's talking about here. And so does that mean that we're going to have this agony for the next 2 weeks? And then, in other words, you could argue what's happening now is boneheaded. But if they do the same thing in 2.5 weeks to the full faith and credit of the United States, that's catastrophic.
Yeah, and, you know, shutting down the government is awful, and it's going to have some serious deleterious consequences, including with a lot of people's lives, and I mean that literally. But that's a flesh wound, in a sense, could be a deep one. Playing with the full faith and credit of the United States is like flashing a sharp knife around the carotid artery. You're talking something much more serious. Now, you know, to be fair, Ian, we've had confrontations in the past over the debt limit, and the parties have each exercised massive hypocrisy, being for increasing the debt limit when it's their party in the presidency, being just as strongly against it when the other party holds the White House. But you haven't seen these negotiations where there was any serious possibility of actually defaulting. Now, what Paul Ryan is saying, which follows on what John Boehner had said for a while when he tried to head off a shutdown, which they thought would be politically damaging to them, is we've got leverage on the debt limit. They really believe that, in effect, by saying we'll blow everybody up unless you accede to our demands, that they can extract something of significance from the president. To play games with the global economy this way is just, I believe, irresponsible.
And Thomas Mann, one of the problems I understand is that the Tea Party congressman, actually I had John Dean on yesterday, who referred to their constituents as low-information voters, but they're getting harangued by the Tea Party activists who show up at congressional meetings. That's how it usually is. The activists are the only people that show up when the congressman comes to town. And they're scaring these guys into outright winging any potential Tea Party challenge in a primary. And, of course, you've got the Club for Growth and the Koch brothers and others funding these Congress people and effectively creating this environment, at least to my mind, that is pushing this party further and further to the right. But if we are dealing with low information, the mentality of low information voters, what can be done in the next 2.5 weeks to educate these people to the extent that the United States is the gold standard in terms of where you park your money in the world? And if you screw with that, you are doing untold damage to this country.
Your analysis is exactly right. And given the short time frame, it really is only the president who can do that, who can convey to the broader public, and especially those who have this sense of rectitude and mission, that disaster awaits. I think what's most essential is every day, many times, he says, I will not negotiate with the full faith and credit of the United States. It's money spent. We have to pay our bills. If we are the deadbeat nation, we will suffer and the globe will suffer. This is equivalent to arbitrarily shutting the economy down and hurting everyone. He's got to say it clearly, concisely, and repetitively between now and then, and not in any way indicate a willingness to bargain on that. In fact, Ian, I think the real hope coming out of this is that the Republicans have pressed so hard, partly because of the divisions within the party, that there's a chance to go for broke and really try to effectively disarm the debt ceiling forever, either by just abolishing it. It's like an appendix. It serves no useful purpose at all, or by returning to a procedure Mitch McConnell actually built into the last debt ceiling problem, which is giving the president the authority to raise the ceiling himself, then reserving for Congress the right to pass a resolution of disapproval subject to a presidential veto, which in turn requires two-thirds vote in both houses to override it. That's what we need out of this, and if Obama could get that, he could make some compromises on other matters, looking for a fig leaf for the Republicans in all of this, and that would then, I think, be a real triumph. But he can't give on the principle. If he buys a sort of short-term agreement with the debt ceiling and we're back at it in 2 months, he's made things worse, not better.
And Norm Ornstein, if indeed a correct analysis that what is driving this apparently irrational behavior is the fear of these Tea Party congressmen that their own Tea Party radical constituents are going to run against them if they don't go ahead and do this, and also the knowledge that they're secure in terms of funding from people like the Club for Growth and the Koch brothers, if that's the case, can anybody get to Grover Norquist and the Koch brothers and anybody on Wall Street, anybody that knows anything about economics, and saying, look, you know, this country benefits enormously from being the place where everybody wants to park their money because it's safe and secure. If you screw with that, you're doing untold long-term damage to the United States.
Well, it's interesting. Grover Norquist is actually now critical of Ted Cruz, of all things. But, you know, the fact is, Ian, that the normal forces that you would expect to be out there avidly working to keep this disaster from taking place, the big business community and the financial community, are not. They were absent entirely when we went through the debacle in 2011 that led to the downgrade in credit by Standard & Poor's. They are barely more present now. And if you look at the organizations that they have engaged in to try and do something about this, the Chamber of Commerce, which basically is responsible more than anybody, perhaps, including the Club for Growth, for electing some of these people who are strapping suicide vests on to take down the economy, and which became pretty much a wholly owned subsidiary of the Republican Party for 2010, Fix the Debt, which is this organization that includes many of those CEOs that basically responded to this current crisis by saying, we need compromise, suggesting in effect that everybody is equally at fault here. Until you get a change there, you're going to see, I think, more traction for the Club for Growth and these forces in the primaries. And, of course, what is just as frightening is that if you did get that action now, it's not clear that this current crop of Republicans will respond to big business or Wall Street. They are very much populist, Main Street guys who don't trust the usual suspects in opinion leadership.
So, Thomas Mann, the president apparently made some of the arguments that we're talking about here on Wednesday evening at the White House when he met with Speaker John Boehner, Senate Minority Leader Mitch McConnell, Senate Majority Leader Harry Reid, and House Minority Leader Nancy Pelosi. Apparently, they also got a briefing on the havoc they're going to cause, currently causing by the government shutdown, and the even greater havoc that will be caused by the government defaulting on its debt. So what's your sense then of how these Republican leaders can be educated? Because you see, at least to my mind, in terms of body language, it sure looks like Boehner's caught in a vice and McConnell has certainly behaved more responsibly. So what's your sense of whether these guys are going to change their tune or are they totally captive by their Tea Party caucus?
If it depends on profiles and courage from Mitch McConnell and John Boehner, the country's in deep trouble. McConnell is facing a Tea Party challenge in the primary for his reelection, as well as a serious Democratic challenger. And John Boehner's speakership, hapless as it is really in a very weak position, and he could lose it all. It really is a matter of sort of generating a sort of sense of really outrage in the broader public now. I'm all for Republican pragmatists forming new super PACs to counter the Club for Growth and Heritage Action and the Koch brothers, if necessary, to try to provide a little protection to those Republicans in the House. And there are some who know their hand is being overplayed and who know just how risky it is. That's why every day's storyline has to be the same. It's very hard to reach people in the public who don't ordinarily pay much attention to politics, and when they do, it's the same old storyline. So it's got to be firm, and it's got to be reinforced by a whole lot of people outside. That's part of what all of our job is.
So, Norm Ornstein, what do you think of Tom's idea that a more traditional Republican, and frankly, they look like an endangered species nowadays, but somebody like the mayor of New York, Bloomberg, who's obviously got deep pockets, funding an alternative to the Club for Growth and giving these leaders that lack the profiles and courage to stand up to the more zealous members of their caucus, to give them the financial cover they have to counteract the Koch brothers and others?
I'm all for it. There actually is an effort underway. Steve LaTourette, a former Republican congressman from Ohio who retired and now heads the Mainstream Partnership, which used to be a group of moderate Republicans. Now it's a group of conservative but sane Republicans, is trying to raise money to do that, to protect Republicans who are attacked by the Club for Growth and Heritage Action in primaries. But I think we need something, as Tom suggested, that's bigger and broader and more ambitious and has a much wider imprimatur. And it needs a lot more money. You have to find something that can counter the pernicious impact of money out there. And, of course, we need even more than that. And, you know, one thing I have to say, Ian, is Tom and I have this as a mantra wherever we go. We're often hit because we seem to be criticizing Republicans. We're criticizing Republicans at this point not because we're anti-Republican, but because that's where the criticism belongs. But we know the American system needs two healthy, vigorous parties going at one another. Those parties are not going to be identical ideologically, and we're not going to have a Republican Party that's made up of moderates or liberals. It'll be conservative. The problem now is it's dominated by radicals, not conservatives.
Well, just a final question to both of you, starting with you, Norm. What it seems that the Congress is doing, and the Tea Party in particular, are doing to the president, they're actually asking for a constitutional surrender. If the president gives in to this kind of extortion and hostage-taking, and after all, it is the official policy of the United States government not to give ransom and give in to hostage-takers and terrorists. So do you see this as not just a sign of congressional dysfunction, but a real challenge to the very separation of powers? And if a president gives in to this kind of blackmail, then the presidency is, to me, is eviscerated.
You're absolutely right. And, you know, the one thing is clear. If the president gives in on just a short-term extension of a continuing resolution, if the president gives in on raising the debt ceiling for a month or two or three or even for a year, then we know what the future will bring. Horror movies like Friday the 13th, Part 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, and 9. Every time we have an issue over fundamentals like keeping the government running or paying our debts, there will be blackmail that will follow. If you negotiate on these terms, then it's a never-ending nightmare, and he can't allow it to happen.
And Tom Mann, a final word for you?
Ian, I do agree this is a case of political terrorism, that we've been talking about the potential economic downsides of this, but you're correct to point out this is fundamentally an attack on our constitutional democracy. If it comes to slaying the hostage by the Republicans and pushing us to a public default, I believe the president, just prior to that default, should indicate that he intends to pay pay all of the bills owed by the U.S. and to borrow the funds through Treasury notes and bonds in order to make that possible. And he's going to do so based on his Article II powers to see that the laws are faithfully executed. Right now we have laws on the books that compel spending, that set limits on taxing, but also set limits on the amount of debt we can run. They're incompatible. They can't all be faithfully executed. And I believe the president should set the priorities on where the Congress's power over the budget is paramount and ignore the debt ceiling and declare it null and void once and for all and face up to the sharp reaction from Republicans, possibly even an effort to impeach him. But I think it would be the right thing to do if the Republicans carry this all the way to and appear to be going over the brink.
Well, Norman Ornstein and Thomas Mann, I thank you both for joining us here today.
Our pleasure, Ian.
Thank you. Again, I've been speaking with Norman Ornstein, a senior fellow at the American Enterprise Institute and a longtime observer of Congress and politics. He writes a weekly column for Roll Call called Congress Inside Out and is an election eve analyst for CBS News. He led a working group of scholars and practitioners that helped shape the law known as the McCain-Feingold that reformed the campaign financing system. He was elected as a fellow to the American Academy of Arts and Sciences in 2004. And also joining us was Thomas Mann, a senior fellow in governance studies at the Brookings Institution, where he holds the W. Averill Harriman Chair. A noted congressional scholar, he writes and speaks widely on American politics and policymaking, including campaigns, elections, campaign finance reform, and the effectiveness of Congress. Together, they are the co-authors of The Broken Branch, How Congress is Failing America and How to Get Back on Track, and most recently, the New York Times bestseller, now out in paperback, It's Even Worse Than It Looks, How the American Constitutional System Collided with the New Politics of Extremism. We're going to take a brief station break and be back talking about who will step up on the Republican side to stop this suicidal march of folly.
Sit down, man. Glenn Beck. Sit down, man.
Rand Paul.
Sit down, man.
LL Cool J.
Sit down, man.
Netanyahu.
Sit down, man.
Sarah Palin.
Sit down, man.
Newt Gingrich.
Sit down, man.
Toby Keith.
Sit down, man.